Today on Straight Talk Africa, President Donald John Trump is America's 45th president. He has surprised and some might say shocked and stunned the Washington establishment. It's no longer business as usual in the nation's capital. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, America's 45th president, and what his policies might mean for Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments. And we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
We begin with two reports on two very special days in Washington that started with the peaceful transfer of power from U.S. President Barack Obama to President Donald Trump. First, here is VOA's Esther Githui-Ewart on what it all means for Africa.
Many Africans wonder if his administration will engage constructively with the continent. Former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria Robin Renee Sanders has worked for the administrations of both Republicans and Democrats and say both parties agree on a number of critical issues on Africa.
Even today we have Electrify Africa, which is a bipartisan legislation. We have AGOA. So I'm hoping that that same kind of spirit of bipartisanship to keep some of these things continues into...
A bipartisan agreement in 2015 extended the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act until 2025 with the aim of expanding U.S. trade and investment in sub-Saharan Africa. Jeffrey Gordon, a U.S. foreign policy advisor and a national security expert, says he is optimistic.
Certainly he wants strong ties with Africa. He wants strong economic development between the United States and Africa. So economic development and strong business ties would be something to look forward to.
In 2009, China overtook the U.S. as Africa's largest trading partner and may benefit if America fails to engage with the continent.
Being a good businessman, if you recognize that the world is going after this continent, where 65% of the population is going to be the biggest growth population on the planet, then I assume that he's going to look at it from the perspective of the benefit to this country and how that win-win needs to be created. And I think we have to be hopeful about that. We have to remember that whatever is done for Africa, it's really done for America.
During his campaign, Trump spoke strongly against terrorism, and many hope he will see Africa's security as a vital concern for America and the world. During his presidential bid, he was very vocal about political corruption, and perhaps this may shape his policy toward countries that are at war fueled by corruption like South Sudan.
If we look at public corruption of politicians, of the political system, as a basis on which a foreign policy can be based, this is where Trump could focus his foreign policy on tackling the political corruption that is perpetuating conflict and other vices in Africa, and especially in South Sudan.
Political analysts and activists for South Sudan say there is a looming genocide in the country, and the peace process has collapsed, resulting in mass displacement of people within the country, while others seek refuge in neighboring countries. As the leader of the most powerful nation on Earth, President Donald Trump's role will be dual, dealing with domestic issues as well as international concerns. Esther Githui-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Became the rulers of this nation again.
Thanks, Esther. Now my colleague, Paul Sisko, on just another work day in the United States. Hadley.
We will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
For most of the estimated 325 million citizens in the United States of America, January 20th, 2017 was a work day like any other, at least until they saw their morning papers. For some, Inauguration Day was a day of infamy. an afternoon they'll never forget, and a night to remember.
I would like to congratulate
Präsidenten der Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika.
You are a great friend of Israel.
World leaders quickly lined up with congratulations for President Trump, and the general tone of world and African reaction has been cautious and hopeful. With no mention of the smooth transition of power, Africa's and Uganda's Yoweri Museveni, Rwanda's Paul Kagame, the Congo's Joseph Kabila praised the inauguration and vowed to continue working together with America and the new president. South Sudan's Salva Kiir echoed optimism, predicting better working relations with the Trump administration. Michael McCui, his communications director, was blunt, saying he doubted the previous administration had any clear policy for South Sudan other than to destroy it. We expect better relations with Trump.
Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said the ties that bind Kenya and the United States of America are based in shared values of democracy, rule of law, and in the equality of peoples. Among the masses in Washington wanting to see and celebrate the historic transfer of presidential power were several thousand protesters. Some turned violent. Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf admitted she's worried about trade deals for Liberia and for Africa, and the programs put in place by Presidents Bush and Obama. Saturday, Trump's first day as president, an estimated 500,000 people, mostly women, gathered in Washington, D.C. in support of women's rights and in protest over the new American president. Anti-Trump demonstrations grew to an estimated 1 million people nationwide, and the women's rally and Trump protests spread to many of the world's major cities. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Ambassador Haman J. Cohen, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the George H. Bush administration, and Ambassador John A. Carson, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the first term of the Obama administration. Well, gentlemen, I have to say, of course, as I often say, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Great to be here.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, though belatedly. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Ambassador Cohen. Your reaction to Friday's inauguration?
Well, it was a speech like we have not heard in a long time. It was kind of speaking very forcefully and kind of, in my view, a bit arrogantly. Usually the inauguration speech is, how can we bring the United States together? So many people didn't vote for me, but I'm your president too. He didn't seem to talk that way. He was talking more about his views and how he's going to make America great again. And this is what caused, I think, this big demonstration against him the following day.
But he has said in the past that he is not only president of those who voted for him November 8, but he is president for all Americans, including those who voted for his competitors, actually.
I believe him. I'm sure he is, and I'm sure he will demonstrate that.
What about you, Ambassador Carson, your immediate reaction to Friday's inauguration?
I was glad to see the peaceful transition of power and the representation by former U.S. presidents at the ceremony. But I, too, found the speech a bit disturbing. It was America looking inward on itself, not projecting itself as a global power, not asserting itself in a position of leadership. It carried too much of a me-first, America-first approach in an era when global partnerships and collaboration are most important. Most of the challenges that we face around the globe today are challenges that must be met by a global community working together, not by any one single nation or one single region. And so instead of seeing a lot of talk about collaboration, partnership, building and strengthening alliances, contributing and growing the partnerships, I found too much of an America first attitude and not of enough of America's partnership as a member of a increasingly complex global community.
Does it, to some degree, remind you of perhaps another inauguration in recent American history?
I'm not sure to which inauguration you're referring.
Well, I'm wondering whether, in fact, you've seen lots of them anyway, at least, you know, since the Second World War and what have you. There was a time, of course, in the history of the United States when it tended to take an isolationist sort of policy.
But I think if you're looking that way, you're looking way back in time and in space. I think that since the end of the Second World War, and certainly since the end of the Cold War 25, 26 years ago, there is a recognition that the problems that are most difficult to face for all of us are problems that are multilateral in nature. They are problems that may, in fact, not be controllable by one individual country or state. The problems we face today are terrorism, cyber security, climate, trafficking in people and in weapons, immigration. All of these require multilateral responses. We need partnerships for those kinds of challenges. Surely, we certainly have challenges with Russia. We have challenges with North Korea. We have challenges with China. But the challenges that are most complex and difficult to manage are sometimes challenges that are the result of non-state actors.
Ambassador Cohen, from what I hear from both of you, really, is that you did not hear a speech that perhaps reflected someone who is supposed to be a leader of the Western world, that here was a president perhaps who was in fact giving a voice to the people who put him in office, and we are talking about Middle America. Is that true?
That's exactly right. You will see that a lot of people in Middle America who lost their jobs because of what they say is globalization, when and they say, well, we're blaming it on U.S. foreign policy. We're giving away everything to other countries. Factories are moving from the United States to Mexico, and we're losing our jobs. So he was speaking to them. He's saying, America first means we want jobs here before they go to Mexico or to Europe or to South America. And it was a very populist, nationalist view, which, as Ambassador Carson says, has not happened since before the Second World War. And it marks a change in American view of the world.
You're obviously a veteran American, you know, diplomat. You've actually been in the diplomatic front line. If you were to suggest something to the new president, what would that be?
Well, I would say that it's dangerous to isolate the United States because there's so much happening outside the United States that has an impact on us. For example, in Africa, which is our specialty, there are terrorists who are attacking African nations in Somalia, in Mali, in Niger. And these people are planning to attack the United States. So we have to worry about them. We also have to worry about food in the world. There are billions of people are growing in population. Where is the food going to come from? Well, we have to understand that the greatest amount of arable land that hasn't been used yet is in Africa. So we will need that to feed the world. So it's impossible to isolate yourself without inflicting self-punishment.
Interesting. Now we'll pause for a short break, and we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. So send us a tweet and let us know what you think about our discussion. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA US Africa. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Well, we did it. We did it. We began this journey, and they said we and me, we didn't have a chance, but we knew we were going to win, and we won. Now the fun begins, okay? Now the fun begins. We're going to do a really good job, and I will be fighting every single day for you. Thank you, everybody.
U.S. President, of course, Donald Trump. Now, Ambassador Carson, you've been around, of course, and you've served in the State Department for several decades. You know, I was struck by the fact that during the last campaign, I hardly had anybody really talk about Africa. Were you?
I was disappointed by the fact that there was very little mention of foreign policy in general, and almost zero mention of Africa, except for Libya and Benghazi. And it does not reflect well on our politics or our politicians not to have mentioned probably the continent which is growing most rapidly in population than any other in the world. A continent that is a major producer of oil and gas and many other minerals, and a continent that faces some of the same global challenges that we across the United States and across the world face. But you're right, no mention of this. And quite honestly, I am not sure that our president knows very much about Africa. Although he controls a global network of hotels, of golf courses, of resorts and casinos, I have not been able to find any of his properties in sub-Saharan Africa. And certainly there's no indication of any kind of deep interest or deep knowledge about the African continent by him and by his closest advisors. That should in itself be a cause of concern while he has found Europe both East and West, and while he's found Latin America and all parts of Asia, his eyes have not yet, in the business world that he was a part of for four decades, found Africa.
Most Americans, from my experience, own at least a cell phone. And there are millions of others who obviously have unfettered access to laptops and what have you. Do these Americans, for example, know that without coltan, a metal that comes out of the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, they probably wouldn't have access to that sort of cell phone or laptop?
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes, and I think Africans have gotten certain signals which would worry them. For example, President Trump says most of our trade agreements or our external trade arrangements are unfair to the United States. I want to correct that. Well, look at the African Growth and Opportunity Act. This gives the Africans many privileges on exporting to the United States, but the United States gets no privilege in return. It's a one-way street. So I think the Africans should start thinking about how can we correct this so that we don't lose any of our benefits. So they have to start thinking about reciprocity. They have also talked about building big infrastructure in the United States. Well, that's going to cost money. So they're going to look abroad and say, where are we giving foreign aid, development assistance? Maybe we could cut down on that so we use money for our own infrastructure. So although they haven't made statements about Africa, some of the general statements, I think, should be of concern to Africans.
Should we be concerned about the possibility that AGOA would be in trouble? Because the last time I checked, I thought that it was actually protected by law.
By law, but the individual countries or groups of countries can be removed from AGOA. It's at the discretion of the United States administration. So I think they're going to look at that very closely and say, let's have reciprocity. We want our goods to go to you duty-free so that we can have jobs in the United States. We want you to buy our tractors, our construction equipment, our power stations, and we want it to enter duty-free just like yours enter us. So I think the Africans should start strategizing on all this and how are they going to cope with a new view of international relations.
During the campaign, Ambassador Cohen, you appeared on a panel that was supporting the different presidential candidates. In your particular case, I remember you were supporting the Ohio governor,
Kasich,
correct?
Yes.
That was a gentleman who was representing Mr. Trump. And among other things, I remember him saying that Mr. Trump wants strong ties with Africa. What exactly did he mean by that?
I think he really didn't know. He was just assuming that Mr. Trump had the same view as he did, which I think turned out to be wrong. And I'm sorry that Governor Kasich didn't win the nomination. I think he's a good Republican, he's a good conservative, but he's reasonable, and he's an internationalist, just like most of the other Republican candidates. So we're in for a new era in U.S. foreign policy.
Johnny, you know that there is a saying that when politicians are campaigning, they do campaign in poetry. They promise heaven on earth. They say all sorts of things, obviously, because they are marketing their message, selling their message in order to be elected. But that, in fact, when they get elected and get to the business of governing, that one they do in prose. Shouldn't we perhaps give the benefit of the doubt to Mr. Trump rather than perhaps focus so much about what he said or didn't say during the campaigns?
Let me cast both a hopeful and a negative light on all of this and say that since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991 and the end of the Cold War, there has been a strong level of bipartisanship among Republicans and Democrats, both in and outside of government and by various administrations. Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, towards Africa. And that has resulted in a number of very, very good partnerships and programs. AGOA, as Hank Cohen has just mentioned, MCC, PEPFAR, Power Africa, Feed the Future, YALI. And it's also resulted in a number of other things, initiatives that have been idiosyncratic to President Obama, a U.S.-Africa leadership summit and two business summits. One hopes that the people who will come in and actually run Africa policy for Mr. Trump and for Secretary Tillerson will be individuals who have deep interest, great expertise, and significant commitment to Africa, to the importance of the African-U.S. relationship, and to the bipartisan nature and commitment of our policies. That's the hopeful sign. The negative sign is quite serious as well. One looks back at some of the general lie statements that President Trump has made, and they should, in fact, be concerning and alarming to Africans as well, especially those Africans who are committed, as we have been as a nation for over 240 years, to democracy, rule of law, good elections, respect for human rights, inclusivity and equality for women, mm-hmm. and religious tolerance and freedom. And some of the things that were said on the campaign trail, not towards Africa at all, but reflective of Africa. Africans should stand up and take notice of his comments about Muslim bans. Countries that have Muslim populations may be put on a list. Those people may be restricted. A good 50% of Africa today is Muslim, and it's not just Egypt. Nigeria has the largest Muslim population in the continent. Mm-hmm. And the three largest states in Africa, including Ethiopia, all have significant Muslim populations. Our strongest partners in Francophone Africa, Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, all have predominantly Muslim populations. People should be concerned about issues like AGOA and what does this mean. They should be concerned about climate change. It is no doubt going to impact Africa more than any other region in the world, and Africa is probably the least prepared to take this on. Mm-hmm. Mr. Trump has been a climate change denier, and some of the people he's appointed have been skeptical of climate change. Well, the Paris Agreement was a significant step forward. And if that is pulled back, it pulls the rug out from under the commitments that we make to Africa. I think that one has to look at trade as and development issues broadly. Will we see the kind of effort made by President Obama, Secretary Clinton, Secretary Kerry, Secretary Pritzker, aided and assisted by former Mayor Bloomberg to put together U.S.-Africa business summits at the highest level. Are these things there? And I think that one has to be concerned about those who believe in democracy, rule of law, and good governance, and wonder whether his statement is enunciated most recently in the inaugural address as to whether we're going to take a hands-off approach, not interfere at all in the issues and concerns of nations. And we will only be a shining example on the Hill rather than a positive and proactive advocate for democracy, rule of law, an end to corruption, more inclusion of women, more respect for human rights. Do those statements that put America first, that draw us back from the international community, also draw us back from those who most share our views and values and respect for democracy, human rights, and the principles that we as a country have held so dearly and have advocated as a nation across administrations.
Interesting. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first here is Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. And still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we received from our audience through social media.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and media reporter, Ayen. Take it away again, Ayen.
Well, thanks again, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question, which asks, what do you think will change between the U.S. and Africa under the Trump presidency? Well, starting off the conversation is our letter of the week. Our letter of the week comes from Yahya Ahmed Gumel in Nigeria, who writes, a lot will change under Trump, especially since during his campaign he did not outline his policies as regard to Africa. This is a clear testimony that Africa will receive less attention under Trump's administration. Whatever the case, Africa should focus on its internal challenges and work in unity to resolve them rather than expect handouts from countries such as America and the likes that usually come with heavy strings attached. Africa should strive to come of age and be the master and architect of its own destiny, devoid of external impositions. Well, thank you, Yahya, for sharing your thoughts with us. And before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOAUSAfrica. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Martin Yalusi, who writes, nothing more than exploitation of Africa and neocolonialism and dependency. Africa should depend on itself. And we have another tweet from Upando Godfrey. He says, I think the level of aid given to Africa will be reduced, and there will be a shift in alliance, leaving out some African dictators. Now to a Facebook comment from Karama Nene, who writes, many non-governmental organizations who work in Africa will not be financed, and hence Africans who are in need of those services shall be lacking. Also, many development projects initiated by former President Barack Obama will not be implemented. Well, Shaka, very interesting. Your thoughts?
Very interesting indeed. What about your reaction to that, Ambassador Cohen?
Well, I think many people, those who have written in, have a right to be pessimistic because based on what they've seen on U.S. television and what President Trump is saying, but I think that the new Secretary of State, the former head of Exxon Mobil, he knows the world and he knows Africa.
You know,
Rex Tillerson, he has major oil projects in Africa, in Angola, and Nigeria, and Chad. Mm-hmm. I've been to brief those people in Houston and Dallas, and they're really enthusiastic about Africa. So I don't think Rex Tillerson is going to allow U.S. policy to be totally isolationist with Africa because he knows how high the stakes are. And secondly, President Trump has talked about China as a big danger to U.S. interests, right? They don't play fair in trade. Mm-hmm. They manipulate their currency. They do all sorts of bad things. well, if we're not active in Africa, we're giving over the territory to China. It's the same thing with the Trans-Pacific Partnership that President has tossed away. Mm-hmm. We're going to give the whole Pacific to China. So I think Tillerson will know that, and I think he will make the policy more reasonable with respect to Africa.
And what about the role, for example, of the only superpower really on this planet Earth? We're talking about the United States having some kind of global responsibility.
That's right.
What about the fact that you were talking about a Trump who comes from New York, a very sophisticated man who obviously has businesses in so many different countries and what have you? Don't you really think that he's going to make sure that America does what is expected of it globally?
I would hope so. So far from what he said, it looks like he may be turning inward. We can't, from his comments, we can't think otherwise, except, for example, he wants to get rid of what he calls Islamic terrorism. Uh-huh. I could see he would be interested in those areas of Africa where you do have terrorist threats. Uh-huh. But so far from everything he said, it looks like he's saying we must take care of America before the rest of the world. So I'm hoping that the new Secretary of State, the new Secretary of Defense, who have great experience, who are very reasonable people, who know the rest of the world, I think they will slowly but surely tell him, now, Mr. President, be careful. The rest of the world is important to us, so let's play a big role.
What about the fact that we're talking about the United States of America here? We're not really talking about what some would characterize as a banana republic. This is a country that is run on the basis of institutions, not an individual, really. Why should we be so much worried, really, when he has institutions around him and he has experienced advisors around him?
Well, I think there's another way of putting it. You can say we have checks and balances. Mm-hmm. So if President Trump says, I want to do this, well, wait a second, there's the Congress. Mm-hmm. You have to pass laws, mm-hmm. and there are different parties in the Congress. So I think you're quite right. The institutions and all the checks and balances, all the things that prevent precipitous action, I think that's going to keep us on an even keel.
Very interesting, yeah. Ayen, do we have a social media reaction?
Yes, in fact, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Ibrahim Mahara from Kenya, who writes, we are likely to see a recess in bilateral cooperation as many governments adopt a wait-and-see stance. And obviously, Trump won't remember that Africa exists until he is reminded. We may see a significant reduction in aid, for instance, on military cooperation with a number of countries like Nigeria and Kenya in the fight against terrorism. And our last Facebook comment comes from Wasonga Ivan, who writes, I am only praying his America First policy will not translate into emptying Africa of its resources and eroding the little democracy we have. Well, Shaka, certainly no shortage of opinion here. Over to you.
Very interesting. What about you, Ambassador Kassel?
We really won't know what the policy of the Trump administration is going to be towards Africa until we have a new Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. The person who is fortunate enough to inherit that position will probably, on a day-to-day basis, be responsible for shaping and guiding 85% to 90% of what is done on behalf of the United States and Africa on a day-to-day basis. And so as we look out, it really is important to wait and see who that person is going to be and what their experience and background and commitment to the continent is. If it is someone who is strong and effective, they will be able to help shape and push. helped to maintain and keep in place some of the bipartisan policies of both Republicans and Democrats, of Bush and Clinton and Bush and Obama over the last 25 years. And so it's important there. The one thing that I think will be a centerpiece of U.S. policy towards Africa in this administration is also very clearly defined in some of the president's global remarks about the international scene and the worldview he has. And that is, as he said in his inaugural address, that it's his intent to eradicate radical Islam, to stop and end the threat of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is carried out around the globe and is given emphasis equally in Africa, then I think that those countries which face genuine terrorist threats
mm-hmm.
probably can count and continue to count on a high level of interest and probably a steady infusion, if not increase, of American support in places like Mali, in places like Somalia, in places like the Chad Basin region with Nigeria and Cameroon and Chad and Niger fighting against Boko Haram and Islamic extremism. I think we will see a commitment, a sustained commitment, and probably an uptick in support there. But that's just a projection on what's been said in broad and general terms. I think that it is important for the United States not to turn away from Africa. I think it is important for the United States to maintain its strong bipartisan commitment to Africa by both Democrats and Republicans. I think it's important for the United States to continue to espouse and advocate and champion and support the values that have made us strong and important at home and have made us influential and a significant partner abroad. And that is our commitment to our democratic principles and values, our respect for human rights, the protection of our corporations and intellectual property rights. And our, as we saw just last week, our peaceful transition of power, even when there is a disagreement by both sides as to whether their candidate won or not.
Mm.
And finally, we need to support our allies, our traditional allies, our legacy allies, our democratic allies, both our old ones and our new ones.
I'd like to add rapidly.
Unfortunately, the time is not our best ally. I will give you an opportunity later in the program. Thanks, Ayen, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, so please keep them coming. If you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the 28th African Union Summit. Voting for a new leader, discussing the re-entry of Morocco, and mapping the future of the continent. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. Our discussion today is about new U.S. President Donald Trump and what his policies might mean for Africa. And our two distinguished guests are former U.S. diplomats to Africa, Ambassador Herman Joe Cohen and Ambassador Johnny Carson. Actually, what I meant, former America's top Africa diplomats. Well, I have to say frankly again that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you in Studio 52.
It's our pleasure.
You're most welcome. Now, you wanted to say something, but unfortunately I had to cut you off because there's no democracy in Studio 52.
I just wanted to add to something Ambassador Carson said. Since the inauguration, I've had contact with some Republican members of Congress. Mm-hmm. For example, Congressman Royce, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee of the House,
mm-hmm.
and Congressman Senator Flake of Arizona, chairman of the Africa Subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
And I see no reduction in their enthusiasm for doing things with Africa. So that gives me hope.
Interesting. Now, the two of you obviously have had very unique opportunities. You have worked in Africa in so many different capacities. If you were to tell us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your hearts and soul, what sort of qualities does one need in order to be an effective Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs?
Well, Secretary Carson.
I think, first of all, you need a deep understanding of the continent, of its challenges, as well as its potential promises and opportunities. I think there has to be a deep respect for the people that you deal with, both in and outside of government. I think there is a need to have a set of priorities, a vision, and a set of principles and policies. I think those are critical. And as you do your daily business with Africa, the capacity to listen and understand and sometimes do more of that than talking. And I think on this side of the Atlantic, I think the job involves bringing together effective coalitions across party lines, keeping the advocacy groups and NGOs informed about what the policy is, and educating, informing, and advocating for. Sometimes it's to eradicate, sometimes mm-hmm. it's to push forward policies and proposals. And finally, a commitment to partner with others and recognize that there are others around the world, both in Africa and Europe and Asia, who can in fact be strong, collaborative, and positive partners in achieving some of the positive outcomes that we seek for ourselves as Americans, and that we hope for and seek for Africans as well.
Very interesting. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Saka. Good evening, our guest, Patrick Crawford here in Arizona, Nigeria. Mr. Trump, Mr. Saka, I just want to congratulate our President Trump. But my I want the President Trump to help us, the Africans, that all those money stolen from Africa, stuck in U.S., it should help us and bring that those money back so that to help the African continent to do what? To solve this poverty, diseases ravaging the Africa. Trump coming is just a messiah. Because when you say messiah has come, it will help us. Now, the policy that the signing of paper, I just did some few days ago, I want you also to sign that of Africans too. And if you also remember some of the policies they left that in favor of Africa, you should try as much as possible and maintain some, not all of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Patrick, all the way from Nigeria. Let's go to Uganda. Good evening, Samuel. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening.
Hello?
Good evening. evening, Mr. Bushaka.
Hello?
Hello, Bushaka. How are you?
Yes, I'm terrific. How are you?
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
No, no, I think there is a problem. There is a static on the phone. Let's come to, what about this question Patrick asked? For example, combating perhaps cement corruption, really, because he talks about the monies that some African big men have, kept in America, that he wants Trump to figure out a way of making sure that that money can be taken back to where it came from. Trump has even talked about, in fact, draining the Washington swamp itself.
That's right. Well,
about corruption.
I've heard some of the people in the Trump camp talk about corruption. You know, why should we be giving aid to Africa when it may be disappearing, our money, mm-hmm. corruption? So they're taking that very seriously. But I think the way to do that is first to reward or to favor those countries who have conquered corruption. For example, the current Nigerian president seems mm-hmm. to, Mr. Buhari,
yes.
seems to have been working hard against corruption. I've heard that even the policeman in the street no longer asks for bribes mm-hmm. when he stops your car because he's afraid of the president.
But the economy has tanked so much yeah. that next time when he appears in election, unless something happens, he may in fact lose.
Yeah, in fact, that goes to another issue. One of the contributors said that there's so much talent in the diaspora. Why can't we get some of them to go back to Africa?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at Nigeria and all their power problems, it's a management problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see 100 people with degrees in business administration who are Nigerians go back and straighten out the management.
It's
not just corruption, it's management, it's all sorts of other things.
Corruption.
We could offer help there.
Interesting. Of course, you saw what happened in the Gambia. The Gambia was supposed to have a smooth transition of government from Mr. Yahya Jammeh to Mr. Adama Barrow a day before we had ours here on Friday. And you know what happened? I gather from my research that this gentleman, Yahya Jammeh, has a house in the Potomac that was bought $3.5 million in 2012. He is now, of course, the last time I checked, in exile in Equatorial Guinea, where, of course, you have a president, perhaps the longest-serving president on this globe, who has been in power for 37 years. A man, whenever he has a democratic election, he gets 98%. What do you do with a man like Yahya Jammeh's property in the Potomac?
I think the United States has been one of the leading countries in trying to ensure that corruption internationally by American companies is eradicated. But in the case of a person like President Jammeh, the new government that is in power can, in fact, petition to the United States government through the Department of State and through the Justice Department to ask about how the house that you have mentioned may have been purchased and whether, in fact, the purchase of that house was as the result of a legitimate or perhaps a illegitimate means. Whether the funds were used appropriately or not, whether they may have been a result of theft and money laundering. The United States has gone after the assets and financial resources of officials if they have been in the United States and have acquired property or assets, and they have done it illegally.
Mm.
The United States took housing and boats and airplanes from the son of the president of Equatorial Guinea.
I'm just going to mention there's a big house that the son bought in California, in Malibu. The U.S. government went to court and confiscated that because it belongs to the people of Equatorial Guinea, not to this gentleman.
There
are methods.
Yeah.
The French, I think, are also after him, actually. I think there have been some cases on him in Paris.
And he's not the only one. There have been others around Africa. And the United States is cooperating to help retrieve some of the resources that were allegedly in this country and held by former military leaders, including people like Sani Abacha.
Ambassador Kasson, we were together in Accra, the Ghanaian capital, back in 2009. When U.S. President Barack Obama made a very, very important speech to the African continent. He talked about how Africa did not need strong leaders, rather it needed strong institutions. Any regrets?
Absolutely not.
Why?
I think that the president was expressing a fundamental value that is an American value. And that is that our democratic institutions are the underpinning of our democracy. Leaders come and go, but it is the resilience and strength of our institutions that matter. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. And the thing that is more important than any leader that we may have in this country is our Constitution. Our Congress, our courts, the separation of powers, the principles in that Constitution mm-hmm. that enshrine freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of religion, freedom of movement, and expanding human equality and human rights for all. Those are the things that underpin our democracy. Those are the things that underpin great democracies around the world, whether it is our neighbors to the north, Canada, or whether it's our relationship with the United Kingdom or France or Germany or Japan. It is the strength of our those institutions and the respect that we hold them in that are most valuable and important. That was a seminal speech. It should be a speech that should be read over and over again, not only by Africans, but also by others. I might also add, you can look at that speech, and I would say add to it the president's speech at the United Nations General Assembly in 2015, and also his speech in Chicago as well. Former President Obama's speech in Chicago just a week ago. The primacy and importance of our democratic institutions are critical.
Also, I think he was the first U.S. president ever to speak the truth to the Africans. He was saying, it's up to you to end corruption. It's up to you to have democracy. Don't expect us to give this to you.
But the Africans expected more from him. They did not only expect him to talk the talk without, in fact, walking that talk.
Well, I think he's done a good job on that. His Power Africa thing, his Feed the Future thing, the two best projects in Africa I've ever seen.
Any single most regrettable decision during your tenure as Assistant Secretary of State to Africa?
Yes. I had a chance to really prevent the city of Monrovia from being destroyed during that civil war, and I failed to do it.
I see. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ambassador Haman J. Cohen, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the George H. Bush administration, and Ambassador John A. Kasson, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the first term of the Obama administration. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.